Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, Canada's first online financial news and research service providing insider news and knowledge to investors. His website, CanadianInsider.com. Welcome back to the show, Ted.
Jim, thanks for having me back as we head into summer 2024.
The BRICS countries, are they going to be coming up with their own gold-backed currency?
Well, that appears to be what is unfolding. Now, there has been a lot of misinformation on social media about what's happening with the BRICS currency and Saudi Arabia, petrodollar. This is... You know, there's been a lot of hype out there, but today I want to kind of lay out where we stand with the BRICS currency and why it is so important and such a positive development for the Canadian gold miners. This is probably the biggest, most consequential development that is unfolding for Canadian gold miners in the past three decades. And what I'm doing is I'm working on a blog post which will be on CanadianInsider.com next week. I'm giving you an overview of it here today on HowStreet.com. So check it out next week on CanadianInsider.com. And we're also, by the way, at CanadianInsider.com, we're going to be unveiling a new free tier for people who can then also get some access to our features there. And we expect to roll that out next week as well. So all pretty timely, because I think the Canadian gold market is going to finally get a lot of global attention as more and more investors start to realize how important gold is going to be in the global financial world over the next decade.
Now, the Canadian government, in its wisdom, got rid of all of its gold. Does this mean Canada should be snapping up gold to stay competitive with the rest of the world?
Well, we certainly see a lot of BRICS countries have been snapping up gold, and I think it's anticipation of what's been going on here, and I'll explain that in a minute. But let's just look at what's been happening. We've seen, yes, you know, 1 month China said we're not buying any gold. Well, that's because gold was hitting all time highs, and you know, the Chinese are pretty good traders, and I think anything that would sort of cool the price for them, they're all in for that. But you know, we've also seen India move 100 metric tons from London back to India. And, you know, why? That's just this year, apparently, according to news reports. Why would that be? Well, let's see what's happening with this BRICS currency. And everything has become a lot clearer now after the St. Petersburg Economic Forum, which took place this month in Russia. You didn't get a lot. You didn't get any coverage of that in Canadian media or American media for a whole bunch of reasons, but it was really, really important in terms of what happened there for the gold market. And what we learned was that Russian President Vladimir Putin had two really key meetings at this forum with what is called the New Development Bank, which is the BRICS, which is a BRICS development bank, and explaining to them in detail how a BRICS currency backed by, well, I should say anchored in gold would work. Now, why is Russia putting this forward? Well, a couple of reasons. There's these obvious geopolitical reasons where they've been sanctioned heavily by the U.S. They've had their assets frozen. But 2024 is also the year that Russia is chairing the BRICS. So it is Russia's year to set the agenda. And so not a big surprise at the top of the agenda is moving forward with some form of BRICS currency type ecosystem. Now, the BRICS countries did give Russia the mandate in Johannesburg back in 2023 in August. They did give the ministers to promote the use of local currencies in payment systems. So that's interesting. So what does gold and these local payments and local currencies, what do they have to do with each other? Well, Russia has been dealing with this challenge, and they had a couple of different solutions to it. And I think the winning solution has now been unveiled, was now unveiled at the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum this month. And so basically what the concept is will be to offer out a BRICS unit. I kind of call it the Buddha unit, and I'll explain that in a minute why I think that's appropriate. But there's a white paper that you can Google or Bing or whatever your favorite search engine is. It's called the Unit White Paper, and basically this unit would be the BRICS digital asset. Okay, so commonly referred to as a BRICS currency, it's sort of, but it's really a digital asset that is backed by a reserve basket. Okay, so that you have this digital asset that's going to be freely traded, but the unit, this digital asset, is going to be backed 40% by gold and 60% by BRICS currencies. So they've come up with, after a fair amount of research, the authors of the white paper, the unit's white paper, which is serving, it seemed, as the foundation for this BRICS currency, that the optimal weighting of the BRICS currency would be 40% gold and 60% fiat currencies. And there's a whole rationale for that, which I'm not going to get into, but basically, it provides a nice trade-off between stability from gold and flexibility with these currencies. So there are three distinguishing features of this BRICS unit ecosystem. First of all, Jim, there's no money printing involved in creating these units, okay? So right now, the U.S. dollar system is all based off of money printing. Instead, how a unit is created, a participant, so whether you're a trading company that imports and exports goods, whether you're a central bank of a major country participating in, what you would do if you want to get some units, you would go to a central depository called a node, and you would deposit gold and the participating currencies in the basket to get your units. So you have to hand over gold and other currencies to get your unit. And the other distinguishing feature of the unit ecosystem is blockchain. So they will use blockchain to keep track of how many units are created and then where they're traded and where they end up. So that's in contrast to the current system that used the current U.S. dollar system that pretty much relies on bank wires, which are very expensive. Jim, I don't know if you've ever had the joyful experience of having to send a wire at your local bank, but you know, it is like, it's not quite as hard as doing your Canadian income taxes, but it's, you know, pretty much up there with in terms of being complicated and having, you know, all the lines you have to fill out and all the things you have to get right. So this will be a big benefit of the system. It uses blockchain instead of bank wires. And finally, it's a decentralized structure that's going to be employed, where it'll be a rules-based system that's based off of voting, a voting structure determined by these nodes that have created the units. So the more units you've created, likely the more votes you're going to get. And it's going to be anchored by an international intergovernmental organization that's governed by a current intergovernmental agreement and the 1980 Budapest Convention. Okay, which of course you do have to go and look up to really dig into what that is. But there's actually two Budapest Convention treaties that were signed in 1980, and both are kind of applicable to what's going on here, as it turns out. But essentially, what the BRICS countries will be relying on is what's called a decentralized autonomous organization that will set the rules for the system, and that it will be these rules will be overseen by a legal entity that will be governed by the participants in the system. So, we will have to see how those rules shake out, but basically it is to try and design the system to make it apolitical, so that you don't have one country that can come in and say, oh, well, you know, we don't like what's going on in South Africa, so, you know, we're going to cut them off. Or we don't like this person in South Africa. They're not going to be allowed to participate. There shouldn't be any of that in this system. Now, we will have to see how the rules unfold. This is how it's designed. But, we are still waiting for the details of how this would work. There is going to be another meeting in Shanghai in September, where Russia will provide more granular details to the BRICS Development Bank, what's called the New Development Bank, in September, and that is likely to proceed to be an advance of the entire concept being presented to the BRICS Leaders Summit in October. So it is moving quite quickly. What we now know is that as this moves forward, it's going to be gold anchored, including currencies of participating countries, and the idea is to make it apolitical, where anyone can participate, and the rules around the whole structure are going to be centered upon the reserve basket, that how much gold is in it, how the currencies are make up the basket. That is going to be the focus of the system. It's not going to be who can participate, are you in the club, what rules, there's going to be no constraints on individual countries, unlike the EU, for example, where if you want to join the EU, you got to sign up to a couple of encyclopedias worth of rules, right, in terms of your market access, your budget deficits, la-di-da. There's none of that in this. This is basically, you want to participate, where's your gold, where's your currencies, here's your unit. I mean, it's a economic-focused, rules-based system that is anchored in gold. It is not anchored in political rules. It is not anchored in policy objectives. Every country that participates in the unit will be free to set whatever rules, political rules and political policies they want. However, there will be some discipline because everything in the basket is denominated in gold. So, if you want to self-destruct your currency with inflationary policies and the like, yeah, you can do that, but it's going to be a lot harder to get your currencies accepted in the basket because they're going to be devalued against gold so much that you're going to, you're going to have a hard time affording any units. So there is discipline in the system, but it's not dictated by political forces. It's going to be dictated by gold market forces. So this is a major, major evolution that's taking place. And, you know, it's not going to happen overnight, but the structure now is moving quite quickly as a consensus seems to be emerging among the BRICS about how it's going to be designed. So once the BRICS countries approve it, which will likely be in October, then there's going to be the rollout period, and that will take quite a bit of time. We still don't, you know what kind of blockchain they're going to use, et cetera. So, I mean, there's still a lot of technical details that still have to be developed, and that will take time. So this is not an overnight sensation, but we can see the direction that the ship is traveling in.
Basically, it's a sanction buster.
Well, you know, they can, yeah. I mean, the U.S. can try and sanction, okay? Now, how... And the authors talk about how to avoid the sanctions here. Well, not to avoid the sanctions, but how the sanctions might work. And the problem is that if you've got a international organization that's been set up under the Budapest Convention, the authors believe it will make it legally difficult to sanction the system. Now, you know, we will see. But the other, I think, real case that they make is that, look, as soon as you try and sanction the unit system, you're just going to strengthen the adoption case even more, because the justification for sanctioning the system is going to be very hard to do, because the system isn't undertaking a war. The system isn't undertaking, drug smuggling. You know, maybe, you know, a participant may be engaged in a war, and a participant may be engaged in drug smuggling, but then, you know, you'll have to sanction those people. So, you know, the actual individuals will still have to deal with the repercussions of their own actions, but sanctioning the system is going to be very difficult.
We'll have more with Ted Dixon right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Ted Dixon. Ted, with the BRICS moving to a gold semi-backed currency, or semi-gold-backed currency, however you want to term it, how is this going to help Canadian gold producers?
Well, the big benefit will be the underlying demand for gold. So if the adoption, now of course it's the big if this unit, I call it the Buddha unit, because it really, as you asked just before the break, you know, what happens on the sanctions side, the Budapest Convention is really kind of the foundation to deflect the legal ability to sanction the system, as opposed to the participants, but the system. The unit demand, you know, requires 40% gold. So there will be this structural demand. If you want to create a unit, you will need gold. And it is anticipated that the unit, if it provides the cost benefits that the designers envisioned, that is being able to trade a unit a lot cheaper than going to the bank and setting up a wire payment and, you know, incurring all those fees, that the unit could trade at a premium to its underlying value. So that you will have participants, central banks and trading houses and exporters, they will be incentivized to actually go buy the gold and get these currencies to go and mint a unit, to go to a node and actually deposit the gold and deposit these currencies and get a unit if it's trading at a premium. So, again, it will depend on the adoption of the unit. So we'll have to watch that very closely. But if the BRICS countries take a shine to this And, you know, there's just been a study out that was released by the World Bank, I believe, that suggests on a purchasing power basis, the Chinese, Russia, and Russian economies are a lot bigger than they're given credit for. You know, these will be two major players along with India in the BRICS, in this BRICS unit. Then, you know, the outlook for gold should be pretty strong over the next decade, you know, in terms of the longer term trends. Of course, you'll always have cyclical ups and downs. And, you know, there will still be competition. The U.S. dollar system isn't going to go away. This is not going to necessarily replace the U.S. dollar. Initially, this is a payment system. It's not a reserve currency system. It would take many years, if not, you know, a decade or more, for this to become a reserve currency. But that's not what it's designed for. That's not the problem it's seeking to solve. It's seeking to be a payments ecosystem. And gold, as we've seen, is being adopted again as a reserve currency. So initially, because of its use, gold's use in this unit ecosystem, gold miners should also benefit from continued strong demand by central banks, you know, outside of central banks like Canada that don't want any gold, but they should benefit from BRICS and BRICS Plus countries allocating more and diversifying more of their reserves to gold. So it's a reserve diversification, a trend that we've already seen in place that should continue. And then as the unit is adopted over the next decade, you know, you would have this natural demand for gold. So hopefully this will get investors thinking about reserves in the ground, Jim. All these reserves that junior miners worked so hard to find, that worked so hard to quantify. You know, I think right now in the market, there's like, you've got 1 million ounces in the ground. Who cares? Right? Like, I think that's kind of the global thinking about gold miners right now. And of course, you know, those of us in Canada and, you know, another country, Australia and U.S. and, you know, other countries who follow the gold market, we have a different view. But in terms of, you know, the other people's money market, other people's money group that, you know, are just wondering how much AI they should have in their portfolio, you know, versus how many cloud computing shares they should have. You know, they don't really think about gold reserves in the ground. Well, if we start getting a competition for payments currency, you know, between the unit and the U.S. dollar, then I think, you know, portfolio managers will have to start taking gold a lot more seriously. They've had the luxury of being able to ignore gold and just focused on U.S. dollar-based assets. So I think this will begin to at least grab more attention. Or again, it's going to take years to unfold, but that's better than having. It's better than having the environment that we've had over the past three decades where basically, you know, gold's been a convenient afterthought at best. Well, now it's going to take center stage. Now, again, I want to emphasize that this is not going to eclipse the U.S. dollar overnight, if at all. The U.S. dollar has massive global adoption, and that is not going to unwind anytime soon. And there is a potential effective, I think, strategy that the U.S. Government can employ to kind of counter the challenge that would be posed by the unit. However, I do not believe that the Biden administration will adopt this strategy. We will have to see what happens after the election in November. If anything, I think the Biden administration, given its track record, would accelerate the adoption of the unit. But if Trump wins, which it looks it's at this point, it looks pretty likely. I think it won't take the Trump administration very long to figure out that they should promote the use of U.S. dollar stablecoins, and that this war on crypto that the Biden administration has waged is foolish, particularly when it comes to stablecoins. So I think there is an effective response that you could see from a future Trump administration by promoting stablecoins, but we're not there yet. A lot can happen between now and the November election. We'll have to see, but it's not like the U.S. Not like the U.S. doesn't have some ways to counter this from a positive standpoint, beyond this sanctions mantra that we've seen kind of get out of control here with the Biden administration. And I think it's fair to say that it's now. They've gone overboard on these sanctions, and now it's working against U.S. interests. These sanctions should probably be used a little bit more sparingly than the shotgun approach, which has been used. But I mean, that's just an opinion. I think that though that the use of stable coins as a way to counter the rise of a BRICS currency, that's a different story, and that could be quite an effective strategy for the U.S. To employ in the years ahead.
Ted, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Jim, thanks for having me back.
My guest has been Ted Dixon, CEO and co-founder of InkResearch.ca, his website CanadianInsider.com. You can find him on X at InkResearch. If you have any questions for Ted or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.